I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, a pre-holiday installment of What You Got Cookin' with John Shields of Gertrude's Restaurant and Damian Mosley of Black Sauce Kitchen. We'll talk barbecue and biscuits, crabs and corn, seafood, meat and veggies. Whatever you're grilling or smoking, and however you're enjoying your holiday eats, Damian and John will share their tips and welcome yours. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews the touring production of the iconic musical Hamilton, which is in residence at Baltimore's Hippodrome Theater. And the peace activist Elizabeth McAllister and the Kings Bay 7 nuclear arms protesters assert a new legal theory in their federal court case. I'll have an update. That's all coming up when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome. It's Midday and What You Got Cookin' edition right before the 4th of July. This is another in our occasional series featuring some of Baltimore's best chefs and foodies who emerge from their steamy kitchens to share with us all manner of cooking tips. I'm Tom Hall. Today, in preparation for the 4th, we are zeroing in on that most American category of summer holiday cooking, the barbecue. What should you grill, and how exactly should you grill it? Whether you're a seasoned backyard cook or a newbie to the summer outdoor cooking scene, we've got your back. And of course, barbecue is a noun as well as a verb. So what's the secret to great barbecue? We'll tackle all of the above today with John Shields. He's a chef, an author, and the proprietor, along with John Gilligan, of Gertrude's Restaurant at the Baltimore Museum of Art, and Damian Mosley, the owner and creative force behind Black Sauce Kitchen, a catering and mobile food business that specializes in biscuits and barbecue. You can join us with your tips, your favorite things to grill for the holidays or any other time. 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. And if you happen to be on that particular site, you can see that the three of us are wearing our WYPR aprons. So Damian, John, good to see you guys. Happy holiday.
Great to be here. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. So Damian, you and I just met a few weeks ago. I asked around one of our associate producers, interns this summer, a guy named Rob Velasquez, who has a lot of experience in the food business. I said, who's the best barbecue folks in town? And your name came right up. And I go to the JFX Farmers Market on Sunday mornings. I've been doing that forever. And I've noticed this line, right? But I never noticed what it was for,
right?
Because I never paid attention, you know? And so I got on that line a few weeks ago.
You did?
And I had the best breakfast I have had in a long, long time. This was about 3 weeks ago. You do a different cut of meat or a different thing every week. And that line last week, Sunday, a couple days ago, I was there at 10 of 7, and there were already 10 people in line, and the market doesn't open until 7. You don't start until 7. So I can't imagine what that line looks like by 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock in the morning. You must go out to Catonsville.
I don't even look up at the line at that time of day.
Yeah, that's got to be too depressing for you.
That's right.
But you have got a following that is just amazing, and it's well worth it, I got to tell you. And you're at the Waverly Market as well as the JFX.
That's right.
So you have this mobile kitchen, this mobile thing that you bring to both of these markets. What do you all bring in there to each of these markets every day? It's a big operation.
Right. Well, I think it starts with biscuits. We have biscuits at the Saturday market and the Sunday market every week, no matter what else is on the menu. And those don't start at the market. We do a lot of the prep for those biscuits during the week, and then we get to the kitchen anywhere between 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. on Saturdays and Sundays. Generally, at this point in the life of Black Sauce, Michael is making probably 85% of the biscuits, and then the other 15%, like if he's off for a Saturday or a Sunday or both, then it's me making them. And then we try to bring interesting, flavorful, and compelling things to put on those biscuits every single week. We try to utilize things that the farmers at the market have in season, tomatoes, peaches, you know, whatever it is. And we try not to be boring. If people are going to stand in that line that many times and for that long, we want to give them their money's worth.
Well, and you really do. It ain't boring. That's the last thing. You could be accused of a lot of things. Boring isn't one of them.
Now,
have you ever tried these biscuits?
Oh,
these
dear
biscuits
God.
Are unbelievable.
They're unbelievable. And you know, like, I'm kind of a purist, and I don't need anything on those biscuits.
Yeah.
I mean, I get the biscuit, and it's like, oh, my God, life is good. And, yeah.
Yeah, they are amazing. And, you know, you have a blurb on your website that where you make a very trenchant observation, which is that biscuits are really personal.
Mm.
I mean, people have this notion of biscuits that goes back to their mother, their grandmother, their grandfather, their father. And so the way people eat biscuits is different and stuff. So to try to accommodate all the possibilities is difficult. But they are, I don't know how to describe them. John, I mean, John, how would you describe them? They're flaky, they're light, they're not heavy. They're delicious, whether there's something on them or not.
It's they just go down so easy, and and I feel so virtuous.
Yeah, right. Well, if you're eating them plain, because I have been having you guys load mine up the last few weeks, and man, they're good that way. But is there, you know, a trick for the biscuit makers at home? I mean, what's the basic premise behind getting your biscuits to be as delicious as they are?
There's a few tricks. One is that we use a very, a European butter or European style butter. And so it's got a pretty high butter fat in it, milk fat. That's one trick.
There goes your virtue out the window there, Shields.
it seemed good.
But, I mean, that's one of the reasons we're serving it, you know, once a week. We're not expecting, it's not like we're open 7 days a week. So that's one thing that we think about. Another trick is, and I don't know if you can mimic this at home, but just using a convection oven, because now you can crank the heat way up. The heat is circulating, and they are just on the precipice of being crusty at the same time that they just happen to be done in the middle.
Mm.
And sometimes we started this business with some old convection ovens, secondhand ovens, that actually we got from Michelle's Granola. And those ovens did exactly what we wanted them to do for a long time. Then we lost those ovens, and we've been using a few other ovens in the last 3 years. And usually it takes a couple of weeks to really get it right in that oven.
Yeah. I mean, you got to sort of work it in. It's like
right.
a pair of shoes or something.
Yep.
Yeah. But a lot more complicated than a pair of shoes.
Yeah. I mean, ovens have hot spots. So then you got to change the way that you're rotating the biscuits. It's like, man, this left corner up here is dangerous. I don't want to have anything in it for too long. I've noticed recently we can fit 8 pans of 12 biscuits on each pan in the oven at one time. And Michael's always pulling one pan out early just because it ends up in that hot spot and it ends up done a little bit early, you know.
Wow. Yeah. And the same goes for grilling when you're on a barbecue grill, John. I mean, you got to be careful. I mean, the heat does not divide evenly.
Totally not. Mm. It's all different all over the place, which is not a bad thing. Because you can use different spots of the grill for specific purposes. You know, if you want to kind of sear something, you get it right in that hot spot, and you're putting a good coating all around that meat or fish or whatever it is so that you keep in the juices in there.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can move it to a medium spot or a cooler spot and let it continue to cook. So you have to kind of know your grill and where your temps are and stuff on that.
Yeah. And you have a hankering for oysters in general.
Yeah.
I mean, you're an oyster fan. I will admit I'm not a fan of oysters. I don't eat oysters. Linnell loves them, but I don't eat oysters because I must be a communist.
It
I
happens.
Had no idea. But you grill oysters. How do you do that?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of different ways. You basically, you can make a barbecue sauce that's not too hot. I mean, not too hot, not too sweet. And you could do it in an oven, but I like doing it on a grill if I can, especially when I have some wood chips in there. So it's going to give them some flavor besides the barbecue sauce. And so I just put them on a pan. So I shuck the oysters. They're open. I put just a little dollop of barbecue sauce on it. And then I put it on in the middle of this hot grill and then put a lid on it, pull the lid down and get some smoke. you don't have to do much to cook oysters because you're not really cooking them. You're just getting them to where they start to curl a little bit at the edge, and then you're going to start slurping. So
and the barbecue sauce is already on them.
It's already on them. You know, sometimes if I do it in an oven, I'll take a little piece of bacon, put that on top of it, and then do it in a real hot oven. You could do the same thing on the grill, but I probably would half cook the bacon ahead of time.
Yeah, so you don't have to cook the whole thing, because that would overcook the oyster.
It would overcook the oyster. That way I can just finish it off. But you get all those flavors, a little barbecue-y thing, and then the wonderful smoke flavor from the ham, and then the smoke that's just coming up from the barbecue. So it's a pretty nifty thing. You want to have somebody working with you there who's shucking, and you just keep moving that thing along. Cause
you want to eat them right after you take them
out. About lines. You do get a line when you're at a cookout, and the people know that you're doing that with the oysters.
And Damien, one of the great thrills of going to Black Sauce at the markets is that every week it's a different menu.
Right.
It's not like you have this standard menu then you serve the same thing every week. You tend to sort of concentrate on a particular cut of beef or a particular thing, and that's kind of the main event, and then you have a few other things around it. So what's the advantage of doing that? That it's, as a consumer, it's like, oh man, what's it going to be today? And it's great.
Right. I mean, the first advantage is I stay interested, you know? I just don't get bored with it. I think that the second advantage is that people have something to look forward to. Like, man, I haven't had this sandwich since this time. And I think that the biggest, I know we're talking about barbecue, I think that the biggest sandwich that falls into that category for us is fried chicken. It's very difficult to execute for that many people. It can't be raining outside. There's specific conditions, so people look forward to particular sandwiches. But there are also some disadvantages. If you're changing your menu all the time, it's difficult to master something, which means that then...
Ah, that's interesting, yeah.
We have... sometimes we're figuring something out as we're making it, if it's the first or second time we've done it. Another disadvantage is that every week, and this amazes me, every week we have people who come visit us for the very first time. You know, you're looking at this line of people and you're thinking all these people have been here before, but people come for the very first time. And people are coming for the second time, but they're looking for what they had the first time.
Yeah.
And it's rarely going to be the same thing.
Yeah, certainly not week to week.
Right.
Yeah. And John, when it comes to grilling seafood on the grill, because you're Mr. Chesapeake, you're Mr. Seafood, you're Mr. Fish,
right.
And I mean, like, you know, a slab of salmon on the grill. I mean, a lot of people put them on those wood slabs, wood slabs that they've marinated
cedar plank. Yeah,
so that's one way of doing it. But are there good fishes to cook on, you know, directly on the grill itself? What works best?
Yeah, most fish will work pretty well, as long as it's a firm texture fish. You know, like salmon works well, trout works well, rockfish works well. You just want to make sure that, or generally what I do, I get one of those grill grates that's a little finer. The holes aren't as big. And I put that over top the main grate. And the fish seems to work better on there. I can flip it better. It doesn't stick as much to the surface. And again, people get so nervous about fish, cooking fish.
I'm always afraid it's going to fall apart. You know, when I try to flip it over and pick it up, I just, you know.
You know, it's generally easy. Now for people who are really nervous, they make a double sided one of those racks that opens up. You can put the fish in the middle of it, and then you just flip the whole thing over. So that is quite doable. But I just like doing it right on the grill, right on the thing. I brush the fish with some oil before I put it on, and often I'll just lightly brush the grill itself, just to, you know, help prevent sticking.
Yeah. And this last Sunday, when we were when I was standing online waiting for my wonderful you did a lamb scrapple.
Oh, right.
Oh,
dude, it was so good. And I'm not even that big a fan of scrapple in general, but man, this was delicious. And Denzel Mitchell, who's been on this show before, because he's a master gardener, he runs the Strength for Love 2 Farm over in Sandtown. He works with you on many mornings. And the grill was too hot.
Right.
You had a problem. I mean, like a mini fire took place underneath, and you had to deal with that while this line kept getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, and that's happened before. But similar to what John was just saying, it's important to keep the grill lubricated. You know, mm-hmm. you don't want things sticking to the grill. But the previous week, we had cooked 80 pounds of steak on the grill. And so over the course of time, sometimes there's just a little bit of grease residue, or somewhere in the corner of the grill, there's a little buildup of creosote or whatever it is, and it can catch. And the grill that we're using allows a lot of oxygen into it, which is a plus, because we can get the fire really hot and we can ramp a fire up pretty quickly. But then, you know, it's also a minus.
But if it's grease, it's going to fan that flame. Yeah.
Right.
We will come back and have more with Damian Mosley and John Shields. Damian Mosley is a chef and proprietor of Black Sauce Kitchen, a catering and mobile food business that makes incredible biscuits and barbecue. You can catch Black Sauce Kitchen every Saturday morning at the Waverly Farmers Market and at the Sunday Market downtown under the JFX. John Shields is here as well. He's a chef and author of several cookbooks. He's also the host of Coastal Cooking and Chesapeake Bay Cooking on Maryland Public Television and PBS. He and his husband, John Gilligan, are the proprietors of Gertrude's Restaurant at the Baltimore Museum of Art. It's What You Got Cooking on Midday. You can join us when we come back. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, to Twitter us. You can go @MiddayWYPR, and you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. It's What You Got Cooking. We are doing a pre-4th of July installment of this occasional series with John Shields and Damian Mosley of the Gertrude's Restaurant and Black Sauce Kitchen, respectively. By the way, tomorrow for the 4th of July, an archive edition on one of our favorite recent shows, my interview with political economist William Davies about his terrific book, Nervous States, Democracy and the Decline of Reason. That's coming up tomorrow on Midday. And on Friday, another couple of favorite books. We'll listen back to my interviews with John Urschel, the former Baltimore Raven who's getting his PhD in mathematics at MIT, and James Cabezas. He's a former investigator who's looked into some of the most high-profile political corruption cases in Maryland. So we'll talk to him and to both of those guys about their fascinating memoirs Friday on Midday. Damian Mosley is a chef and the proprietor of Black Sauce Kitchen. They make unbelievable biscuits, and they always have a line at both the Waverly and the Farmers Market beneath the expressway on Sunday mornings. Amber says hi on Facebook and says, where can I get these biscuits? Well, Saturday morning at Waverly over on 33rd Street and Sunday morning at the JFX Farmers Market. John Shields is here as well. He's an author and television personality who presides over Gertrude's Restaurant at the BMA. To join our conversation, to give us your tips on barbecuing, and to have, if you have any questions for either Damian or John, 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wypr.org. You can send us a tweet @MiddayWYPR. You can follow me on Twitter @TomHallWYPR. You can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. So when it comes to Damian, your approach to making barbecue, let's talk about barbecue as the noun rather than the verb. Some general principles.
So I'd say I have three principles. Two are fairly specific and one's pretty general. The two specific ones are that I'm always trying to build several dimensions of flavor. I don't want to eat something or serve something where it's just sweet or it's just spicy. So I'm always thinking from the beginning about how can I build several dimensions of flavor. The other thing with barbecues is that I'm trying to keep things moist. It's very easy for things to dry out on a grill. It's like the driest of dry heat cooking, a smoker as well. So one thing that I employ often that kind of addresses both of those principles is a brine. I know people cooking at home think about that when it comes time to make a turkey for Thanksgiving.
Right.
But if I'm going to make some chicken on a grill or in a smoker, or some duck or some pork loin. All of those are things that are relatively lean, and I'm going to want to employ a brine. If I'm going to cook something that's fattier, then I'm going to make an effort to utilize that fat, both for flavor and for keeping something moist.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd say to step back a little bit and look at it a little bit more generally, the other thing that I'm thinking about is my audience. So, if I'm barbecuing at home, I'm thinking about where are these folks from and what are their expectations?
Yeah, what would resonate with them?
Right.
You know, and the assumptions of how they grew up and what they're used to eating.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm thinking about.
And of course, you have a very broad audience at a farmer's market.
Right.
There's folks from all over the place. And John, when it comes to barbecue sauce,
mm-hmm.
Whether you're putting it on barbecue or just, chicken or fish or anything, You have a recipe that we'll post online about, homemade barbecue sauce.
Yeah.
I'll admit I'm lazy and I sometimes get the pre-made stuff. Here's a dumb question because I'm a dumb guy. Do you put the barbecue sauce on before you put the meat or as you put the meat on the grill, or do you cook it a little bit and then put the sauce on at the end? Or at what point in the process do you apply the sauce?
Well, I generally always put it on towards the end, right when it's finishing up. Especially if I'm using something that has kind of a ketchup base and has some honey or, some sweetener in it, because it burns.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing, it just burns. So I may, as Damien said, brine whatever it is that I'm going to cook first, or I may marinate something first, but I always put the barbecue sauce on towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I serve it on the side, and it can be a dipping thing. Do you know
yeah.
what I mean?
So you don't even have to apply it.
So you don't necessarily have to be on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. And Damien, when it comes to making barbecue, do you do different sauces all the time? You do different marinades and different things. You'd be mix it up. I mean, you don't have a standard. Is there a standard barbecue sauce that you use on a chicken or a pork or?
No. The one thing that we do that's a little bit standard is that for 75% of the stuff that we're going to eventually barbecue, we put a very similar barbecue rub on it.
A rub before right. you put it on the grill.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
We don't use that rub for lamb, for example. There are things that we don't use it for. I probably would never use it for fish. I think it would overpower most fish. But that rub, whether it's brisket or chicken or pork shoulder, that's pretty common. As far as sauce, the sauce changes a lot based on what we have available to us in the kitchen. And we make a lot of preserves. So those preserves, I think a preserve in a lot of people's house is ketchup. And that's very often what they use as a base for the sauce. And it makes a lot of sense. A preserve for us in the kitchen might be smoked peach jam, and it's serving a very similar purpose.
Mm-hmm. So, because it's sweet,
and
you can stick it in there and combine it with a bunch of other stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. And what are the other basic ingredients for barbecue sauce, John? I mean, in addition to ketchup or something like a preserve.
Some onions, often some dry mustard, those kinds of things. Some garlic works out well. Worcestershire sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Around here they put Worcestershire and everything. Horseradish is
yeah,
a good thing. And I usually put a little bit of lemon juice in because I want to get a balance between sour and sweet with the sauce.
It's so easy to overcook stuff on a grill, it seems to me. That's my big challenge all the time. I had a friend, a chef, who once suggested, like, if I'm going to grill some chicken breasts or something, like a, skinless, boneless chicken breast, he sort of pre-cooks them in the oven a little bit and then puts them on the grill and puts the lines on it and finishes it off. And I found that does help keep things moist.
Mm.
So, because if I put it on raw, if I put the raw chicken on the grill, it's real hard for me to figure out exactly when it's cooked without getting it too dried out. I mean, how do you develop a sense of, how long this is going to take?
I develop that sense, I think, just by repetition,
yeah.
by doing it so many times. I mean, I do something similar to that. I just think I do it in the reverse order.
Yeah.
I think that once something is cooked and the outside starts to seal and it becomes less permeable, then the smoke, some of the flavor that you can get from a grill and the fuel that you're using on a grill, it can't get into that meat anymore, or into that chicken breast.
Because it's already sealed.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'd be more likely, I think, to just quickly, if I was going to use both, if it's going to use both cooking methods, I'd probably use the grill first and then transfer it to the oven.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah, and that makes sense because then it doesn't get cold. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. But John, when it comes to smoking, there's so many different possibilities for that because you can get these chips that every variety imaginable.
Yeah, it's pretty. We do that, you know, at the restaurant. We go online and we get all these different kinds of things just because the guys love to play around with different things. They're doing different combinations and then they like, and that's what's fun. You know, it's almost like a seasoning. You know, when you think of the wood that you're using or the chips that you're using in it, you know, and you know, you don't have to make it all that complicated. I mean, you can just get, you know, an old fashioned charcoal. Kingsford or something.
Kingsford, sure. Put the blue bag out. Yeah.
And then you can get some of these chips, you know, hickory chips or whatever. And if they're bigger, you can soak them a little bit and then put them in there. And it just gives a lot of flavor. And you don't have to think through too many things. So it's, again, it's the same premise I talk about with the fish. People get worried about that. Same thing with smoking. It doesn't have to be that complicated. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a very primal thing when you're talking right. about barbecuing, grilling. We're talking about open fire or open flames, and that's a simple thing.
Yeah. Do you smoke any of the stuff down at the farmer's market? Because it seems like the surface that you're cooking on isn't a, you know, it's not like a barbecue grill. It's a flat surface that you would find in a restaurant, right? I mean, yeah, you hook this gigantic thing up to your truck and just back it in there. But
we definitely smoke some things. So generally when we're making steak, even though it's only, you know, something thin like skirt steak is maybe only on there 10 minutes. Something thicker like a bavette might be on there for 20 minutes. But we're cooking it a little bit indirectly in terms of where the heat source is so that it can stay on there longer. And then we put it in a place where the smoke is going to travel and go up and around it and then out the grill. So when I'm slicing that steak, you can see that the smoke has penetrated the meat.
Yeah, yeah. I had this bavette. That was the first thing I had.
That's right.
About 3 weeks ago, you made a bavette, put it on the biscuit with an egg. It was heavenly. I never even heard of bavette. That's a cut of meat, right?
Right. It's a cut kind of from the belly of the cow. Very tender, very thick. It's got kind of an uneven shape, so that's the difficulty in it. Generally, when I cook a bavette, you're going to have some that's more done and less done in the same steak. So that's the part to figure out.
But that's okay.
Right.
I mean, yeah, that works. So Rob from Baltimore asks, what about grilling vegetables? I'm a vegetarian. So you throw a lot of vegetables on the grill, John.
Right? Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the nicest things to do. We sometimes like go make a Mediterranean platter just with, you know, eggplants and squash and tomatoes. And so you can go wild with that and you can get that done ahead of time and you just can serve that at room temperature, really. Or you can make some kebabs with the vegetables.
You know, and you cook them dry, right? You don't put olive oil or anything on them before you put them on the grill, right? Because that would make, that would induce flaming.
Right? Well, I wouldn't put very much. I might take a brush and just very lightly brush it, but I don't put much on because you're right. The flame will come up and it'll burn it. You can do it with, you know, bell peppers and zucchini kinds of things and tomatoes. You could take little cobs of corn. You could even use some potatoes or sweet potatoes. Those you might just want to par cook for about 5-10 minutes first, cut them into chunks, and then put those on. But you can get a beautiful kind of thing, and then you could make sort of like a sriracha aioli or something and just kind of drizzle that all over those skewers, and you got a great meal with that.
And you like to grill corn on the grill.
Oh, I love that.
Do you do that with the husk on?
Yeah, I keep the husk on, and I just put it in cold water in the husks and soak it for about 10-15 minutes, and then I put it on the grill and, you know, good hot grill, and I turn it all the time, and that takes about 10-12 minutes, you know, to cook. So what it's doing is it's steaming the corn because, you know, the water or the liquid went in there. And I think that that's
so the kernels don't come out, you know, charbroiled.
No, right.
So it looks as if you've been just cooking them in water,
yeah,
I guess.
But it gives it a really, really, really nice flavor.
So, yeah, so it is. It's a different flavor when it's done on the grill as opposed to in a pot.
It does. Well, because you're going to get some of that smoky flavor coming up. And then, you know, you could, you know, you can make all kinds of little rub things that you could brush on it with some olive oil or some butter when it comes out, you know, give it a different dimension.
Michelle sends us an email. Damien, this is probably for you. So you use dry rubs when barbecuing. So it's dry rubs plus, right, is what you're saying.
Right. We do use dry rubs. We might first use a brine. And if I use a brine, I'm going to put some of the dry rub into the brine so that it has a chance to soak up some of that flavor at that point. And then, for chicken, let's say. And then when I pull the chicken out of the brine, I'm going to try to let the skin get a little bit dry, and then I'm going to put that same dry rub on the chicken. I'm going to cook the chicken until it's almost done, and then exactly as John said, I'm going to then employ my barbecue sauce when it's nearly done. You know, I may take it out of the oven, paint it a little bit with sauce, and then put it back in so that it doesn't burn, but it does, the sauce does stick to the surface of the chicken and gives you the stickiness and sweetness and maybe some heat that you're looking for.
And just real quick, what's involved in a brine? What actually goes into that?
A brine, at its most basic level, is just like water and kosher salt, boiling water and salt, so that it becomes a solution. And then some kind of way, you know, I don't know all of the science behind it, but some kind of way it gives the meat a little bit of saltiness, but it gives you more of a margin for error when you're cooking because it allows it to stay moist much longer.
Yeah, it keeps it moist. Yeah. And John, we just got a few seconds left. You actually grill crabs on the grill. And we have a recipe. It's a Greek recipe that we'll put online. So that's a possibility. Yeah.
It is a possibility. Those two you want to par cook for about halfway. So if you figuring you're going to steam a crab for about 20 minutes, about 5-10 minutes with that, take it out, and then you're cutting it into little quarters, putting it in with some olive oil and spices and stuff, and then just start grilling those babies, and it's delicious.
Yum, yum, yum. Well, have a great holiday. I will see you both soon. I will start seeing you maybe on Saturdays now, because I may not be able to wait until Sunday to go to Black Sox Kitchen. Thank you guys for coming by. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam.
Damien Mosley is the chef and proprietor of Black Sox Kitchen. You can find him at the Saturday Farmers Market in Waverly here in Baltimore, and at the Sunday Market downtown under the JFX. John Shields is a chef and an author and the host of Coastal Cooking and Chesapeake Bay Cooking on Maryland Public Television and PBS. He and his husband, John Gilligan, own Gertrude's Restaurant at the BMA. Quick break. When we return, theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins me with a review of Hamilton. It's at the Hippodrome. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.